Jesse Corcoran Podcast.
Christmas in Las Vegas. Decorate your tree with chips. Let's roll a yo beneath the mistletoe while that angel strips. Rudolph sold the sled, now he's betting on red in a casino made out of gingerbread. Christmas in Las Vegas, it's a trip. The wise men are rolling sevens, the elves are doubling down. Light a candle and pull the handle, I love that jingling sound. Every showgirl and boy ride in a sleigh of joy, pulled by eight tiny tigers eating Siegfried and Roy. Christmas in Las Vegas, what a town. Santa brought me two aces, I wonder if I should split. Hey waitress, bring me a drink while I think, what would Jesus hit? The strip lights are all twinkling, there's no room at the inn. But because 'tis the season, they'll comp a suite for Mary at the Wynn. Christmas in Las Vegas, it's Bethlehem with bling. Let's hope the dealer brings four newborn kings, 'cause my baby needs a brand new pair of five golden rings. Christmas in Las Vegas really swings, cha-cha-cha-ching. I said Christmas in Las Vegas really swings.
Yo, yo, yo.
You said it, Santa. Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank you. Good night.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Friday, December 3rd, 2021, 340 days remaining in our American democratic system as we've known it. You're at jcontheline.com. Thank you very much for being here. You know where everybody was, including this radio show. Well, this is a podcast now, but it was a radio show back in the day, and the year was 1990. You know where we all were? In beautiful downtown New Madrid, Missouri. Yes, this was the anniversary of the earthquake that didn't happen. For those of you who were not around these here parts in the Midwest, maybe you're too young, or maybe you just do a lot of good drugs to wipe out your memory. This was the climatologist by the name of Dr. Ivan Browning. I'm not even sure where he was. I want to say it was California or Oklahoma or something like that. And he was a climatologist. To be honest with you, I don't even really know exactly what a climatologist does. My guess is that, people who argue against the idea of climate change and global warming don't know the difference between climate and weather. Weather is sort of like what's happening on almost like an hourly, day-to-day basis, and climate has more to do with long-range stuff. That's the best explanation I can probably give you. But again, if you're around during those times, you know exactly. People were scared to death. They thought there was going to be an earthquake. And all he said, really, was that there was sort of a harmonic convergence of a bunch of atmospheric, climatology-related things, gravity, gravitational pull from the moon, I don't know. But he said this would be the kind of rarely seen combined atmospheric and climatological elements all coming together at the same time, which could produce an earthquake. That's the gist of what the guy said. And everybody just ran with it. And the next thing you know, we're buying Velcro to Velcro everything to the wall. wonder how many people who Velcroed stuff to the wall in 1990 still have it Velcroed. But hey, Dr. Ivan Browning, you know, got his T-square and his slide rule. And the point of all of this is a little town in southeastern Missouri, New Madrid, where the New Madrid Fault is. And it was very educational because we went down there a couple of times to sort of check the whole thing out. And then, of course, it was like, well, got to go live, got to go live. So we took the radio show down there, and I was working at Channel 5 also at the time. So we did live shots from down there. Boy, you want to talk about an impoverished community. Holy crap. You're just sort of like, what happened down here? What was there ever a reason for this place to exist? Because the place, you know, really, really... We went through Little Egypt about 6 months ago, Cairo and places like that, and I had never been through there. And I knew about Cairo, Illinois, because, first of all, it's often mispronounced. It isn't pronounced like the one in Egypt. It's not Cairo, it's Cairo. And for people who live there, you know that. So that's number one. And then back in the late 60s and early 70s, there's a lot of racial tension down there and riots and burning stuff. And I was living in Chicago at the time, and they were always doing these shows and reports from Southern Illinois and Cairo and Little Egypt. And we're like, what the hell's going on down there? Well, whatever they destroyed down there or burned to the ground, they never bothered rebuilding. And it was in bad shape. New Madrid, I'm not trying to like just beat up on a bunch of poor people, but man, like I said, it was really, really, let's just put it this way. It had been a long time since I was, you know, really literally driving through the middle of a community like that. So anyhow, we're all set up down there. Oh, and that, I believe that was the first time I'd been to the home of Throat Rolls. So like I said, a very, very educational trip. So we get down there that morning, 37 satellite uplink trucks from all over the Midwest. All the networks are there, CBS, NBC, Fox, everybody's there. And then plus, there's about four local over-the-air stations in every major city in the Midwest. We're talking Cincinnati, Louisville, Chicago, Memphis. Like I said, plus all the networks, the cable news guys. And again, this was, what, 31 years ago. So the technology was quite a bit different. You had to have those big honking satellite uplink trucks with those giant dishes on the top, and you'd have to elevate a mast that would go about 30 feet into the air, and it was really, really hulkish looking. So all these things are all set up right along the riverfront. They had a little satellite village there, and everybody throughout the Midwest, everybody's got you know, reporters down there. We're down there, and of course, not a goddamn thing happened. Nothing happened. But boy, they sold a lot of Velcro, and there are a lot of VHS tapes, you know, that were sold, the earthquake preparedness, telling people how to shut off their gas and what happens if there's a fire and survival techniques, and back to more Velcro. Dr. Ivan Browning, 31 years ago today down in New Madrid, Illinois. Wow, what a memory that one is. Didn't see much of the Blues game last night. Didn't get a chance to see much of the Thursday night football game because my daughter and I were watching the Black Annie live on NBC. I can't even imagine the hours of rehearsal that must have been involved in this thing. They were live for 3 hours last night. These are 12 and 13-year-old kids for the most part, all dancing and singing and huffing and puffing. And I'm not a theater critic, but it sure looked pretty flawless to me. Singing was great. All the actors, all the actresses. Taraji P. Henson was really, really good in her role. Never knew she could sing like that. And then the little girl I got to play. And, you know, let me just tell you, I was very proud of myself that I had managed to remember the name Quavagene something, who played the Black Annie in the movie. And then they bring out this new kid last night, and she's amazing. And the guy who played Danny Warbucks last night was Harry Connick Jr. People thought that there was something wrong with his skull cap last night, you know, because he's got a full head of hair, so they had him in full makeup, because you got to have that bald head. And my daughter and I were watching going, it looks like his makeup is coming off. It looks like the skull cap is coming off. And then when you get a better look at it, you see what it was actually an apparatus that they had over his right ear that also contained a small microphone, and that's how his audio was being picked up. But it didn't look right. It was very distracting, and half the night it looked like it was going to come off. But that's a small criticism, and I'll tell you what else. I love Harry Connick Jr. I love this guy. You know, I can take his music in small doses, but I like him. I've had a chance to meet him a couple of times, interview him a couple of times. He was in a movie with Holly Hunter and Sigourney Weaver a couple of years back. Well, a couple more like 30 years back. And it was sort of weird looking back then. He was very young. He's probably 19, 20 years old. And his really, really skinny head and everything and big ears. I think he's probably had some work done along the way. But, you know, we got a chance to see his show at the Fabulous Fox Theater. He's a tremendous showman. A tremendous showman. He's funny. He's interactive with the crowd. The band is absolutely incredible, and he's really, really good. Like I said, I can only take it in small doses, but I really like Harry Connick Jr.
Before we do anything, let's give people a little taste of the new Christmas album. I'm sure a lot of people have not heard this, so let's just give them a little taste of Harry Connick's new Christmas album.
It's Harry for the Holidays.
Harry for the Holidays. Here
it is. Do you hear what I hear? A song echoes through the trees.
Wait a minute.
With a voice
Harry, I'm not really sure that this is.
The
first one's much better than this.
Who the hell produced this?
Maybe just a bad cut. Yeah, you want to try another one?
Yeah, I don't know.
Wait, he had a frog in his throat.
No, we're giving Harry a little hard time here. Harry, is it? I'm glad he's laughing. No, here we go. Here's a little bit of Harry.
That is hilarious.
I'll be home.
There you go.
For Christmas.
Oh, see, now you go. Now throw a log in the fireplace. Here we go. Get out of here.
You can climb.
Probably just makes you sick when people sing along with your records.
Yeah,
huh?
Please don't sing with
it. That's no good. That's no good.
I just you specifically, but other people.
Hey. Talking live with Harry Connick Jr., I think that pretty much everybody became familiar with you and acquainted with you for the first time when you did the movie soundtrack for When Harry Met Sally. How did that end up coming to be?
Well, at the time, I was about 21 years old, and I had recorded two records, and somebody gave one of the records to Rob Reiner, who directed When Harry Met Sally, and he thought that my music would be good on the actual soundtrack for the movie. During the movie, you know, you could hear my music playing in the background.
It had and, to be you and all that stuff in the background, yeah.
Yeah, and listen, number one, if you could not sing when I'm talking. Okay,
wow.
I thought we established that.
I really
Wow, the girls are in love with you now.
Yeah, Harry, you have to be on every week. We're bigger fans now, even more so.
That's just bad. I'm going to have to send out, you know, in my rider.
Put it in the contract,
No red M&Ms and no singing in my presence.
No red leather outfits either.
No singing by JC during the interview.
No red leather outfits.
Right.
That's right.
Final.
Well, what happened, he heard the music and said it would be cool, and then I ended up doing the songs on the soundtrack album, so it was a big lucky break for
Harry,
me.
Harry, with all the success that you had at such an early age, I mean, you're talking about 19, 21, that kind of stuff, do you feel like you missed anything? I mean, do you feel like you missed just like, you know, being in a fraternity and having college buddies and going out drinking and throwing a football around and doing all that kind of, because it doesn't seem like there was much of that much room available for you to do that kind of stuff.
Well, there wasn't, and I didn't, you know, I was never in a fraternity, and I never really did all of that stuff. And, I, you know, sometimes I hear stories of people, and they talk about, you know, their frat buddies and all of, you know, the drinking stories and stuff. And I guess a piece of me is envious of that, only because I didn't do it. But I don't feel like I needed that at that time in my life. And that's, you know, the work that I put in kind of got me where I am now. And, you know, I feel like my life is complete. But, you know, you always are interested in things that you don't know about, and I don't really know that type of life. The only way I know it is because I go and play at a lot of colleges, and I see a lot of these people, you know, and they're having a good time at partying and stuff, and I feel like I'm a part of it in a sense, but I guess a piece of me wishes I had gone through that, but not too much. You know,
at fraternity parties, they sing along with the music that's being played at the party, too. No, I just
they sound like that first song.
Yeah, but they're drunk.
They have an excuse. Right. Jill Goodacre, your lovely bride, and you got kids and the whole thing now. Who fired on who?
You mean who picked up on whom?
Yes, exactly.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I introduced myself to her. I mean, in a million years, I don't think she would have walked up to me. I mean, when I met her, I was like really skinny and just kind of a geek. I mean, I was only 22 when I met her.
Wow.
And I just walked up to her and asked her if she wanted to have lunch with me, and she said she did, and that was it, man. I was I was hooked from the first minute.
I'm sure you sing to your kids. Does she like you to sing
to
her?
No, indeed. She's so over me, you wouldn't even believe it. She done fall for that crap. She did it for like a week.
It's and like, then take it's like, out the garbage
shut
already.
Shut up already. You know? Oh, it's, we laugh about it, but it's so like that. I mean, it's just, she just couldn't. I mean, seriously, she, you know, sometimes I'll try to get romantic and stuff and sing a little bit, and she'll listen to it, but I know it's like I can see the thought bubble saying, well, this idiot, shut up. You know, like,
it's just, and by the way, in addition
what
to
a loser, you know?
In addition to Harry for the Holidays, the Christmas album, mark your calendars. You've got Harry's next release, Only You. That's Standards from the 50s and 60s. That's coming out in February, right?
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I mean, this was a suggestion that my record company president made to me, and it's the first time I've ever actually, well, how do I put this? First time I've actually listened to a suggestion that my record company had for me. And I'm so glad I did, because, I mean, these are songs I never would have thought to do. Only You, I Only Have Eyes for You, The Very Thought of You. So I'm real excited about it.
Fabulous.
Well, Harry,
fabulous.
What's the difference quickly between, obviously, When My Heart Finds Christmas and now the new one, Harry for the Holidays? What made you decide to do that second Christmas album?
People had asked over the years if I was ever going to do one again, and mm-hmm. when I did the first one, I had no intention of doing two, but mm-hmm. I don't know, it's been 10 years, it just seemed like something fun to do, really.
It's a huge success.
All right, we got to let you go, Harry, for the holidays, and you've got all these Christmas specials and
treats.
Yeah,
it's Today Show tomorrow, The View Thursday, lots of stuff.
Man, all kinds
of
stuff going
on. The
lighting
of the Christmas tree in Rockefeller Center, isn't that tomorrow night, I think?
Yeah, tomorrow night. So there'll be a lot of stuff going on. So I'm thrilled I can, you know, share this music with people.
Harry for the Holidays. Have a great Christmas, Harry Connick Jr. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, thanks. And look, no more singing.
All right, no more vinyl suits. Get out of here.
Yeah, baby. It's a deal.
Harry Connick Jr. right there. Harry for the Holidays.
You'll be your Christmas and white, but I have a blue Christmas.
Now do you know why I like the guy? How much fun was that? We've really hit the jackpot this week, by the way. Yesterday, that great segment with Leslie Nielsen from the Naked Gun movies. And now Harry Connick Jr. today. And again, if you're like, oh, Leslie Nielsen yesterday, I didn't hear that. We archive everything. So on the weekend, if you want, just binge listen to some of these things. But that was a great interview, too. But Harry Connick Jr., terrific guy. Terrific guy. All right, switching gears big time here. This Alec Baldwin thing makes a little more sense now, but I really got a bone to pick with the ABC News Network because they really tried to get away with something. If you'll recall, Alec Baldwin had not really said too much about the incident, and he put together this thing with George Stephanopoulos, and they released a couple of sound bites, and he's like, well, I never pulled the trigger. So for 36 hours, all the networks and the cable news guys and the internet and everybody, social media, going, what a stupid thing to say. A gun can't go off by itself. And I know nothing about guns, but I know that unless you take a gun and you put it in a fire, or if you drop it, it's got to be like the exact wrong way a gun theoretically could go off. I think it happens in the movies more than it actually happens, where somebody drops a gun and it goes off. Two things pretty much have to happen with a gun like that. It's got to be cocked, and then somebody has to pull the trigger. And Alec Baldwin's like, oh, I didn't pull the trigger. It can't go off by itself. Well, now they finally run the interview with George Stephanopoulos last night, and Alec Baldwin says, well, the gun was cocked, but I didn't pull it. It's like, oh. See, ABC left out the part where Alec Baldwin had said that the gun was cocked. So when he said, I didn't pull the trigger, people were like, well, you're an idiot for saying that. That can't happen. Well, it can happen if the gun is cocked. I think ABC did that on purpose to get everybody riled up and to get publicity for the thing, which really worked. But that was a shameful omission in the way they released bits and pieces of the story in a way to promote the whole thing. I'll say this. Those weren't Kyle Rittenhouse crocodile tears with Alec Baldwin last night. That guy is destroyed over this. He is destroyed. And this is what we do in this country. If we like the person who somehow ends up with his tit in a ringer, we rationalize. We come up with excuses. We come up with rationalizations as to how it could have happened. If you don't like the person and then they get their tit caught in the ringer, well, it's pretty much over. So Alec Baldwin, who's been a polarizing force in American media and entertainment, I think that's safe to say, you got half the people against you whose minds were made up before they even heard any facts in the whole thing. But something's got to give on this. You got a dead cinematographer. Somebody has to be responsible for it. Sometime over the weekend, it is likely that I will publish on social media my take on this whole argument about whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie. And you have to understand this. Some of my best friends believe that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I just think that they're wrong. And I think I can supply them with enough circumstantial evidence to make them rethink their position. And then they'll go right back to watching the movie at Christmas anyhow. But there's a lot of movies like that. You know, Bridget Jones' Diary. You know, Colin Firth has got that reindeer sweater, and there's a, you know, kissing each other in the falling snow and twinkling Christmas lights. Trading Places, back in 1983, Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, Jamie Lee Curtis. All right, it's set during Christmas time, but the filmmakers never intended it to be perceived as a holiday movie. That's why they released it in June. The Chronicles of Narnia. Father Christmas makes an appearance and hands out presents. Even Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, 1999. That opens with a fancy holiday party with lots of Christmas trees. Gremlins, 84. Gizmo was purchased as a Christmas gift, and the entire movie takes place during the holidays. I've never heard anybody describe that as a Christmas movie. Batman Returns, it's a tree lighting ceremony. There's penguins around. While You Were Sleeping doesn't mention Christmas, but, you know, the sweaters, the snow, and all that sort of stuff. Lethal Weapon in 87, it opens to Jingle Bell Rock. Meet Me in St. Louis is a Christmas Eve ball with Judy Garland. But for some reason, well, I know what the reasons are. I think they're bullshit reasons. You got this whole Die Hard thing, and I will be dealing with this, and I will present my case to the American public sometime in the next couple of days here. All right, this weekend, Sunday Night Football, Seattle hosting San Francisco. But the one everybody's waiting for is the Monday night game. That's New England at Buffalo. Oh, man. That's going to be a good one on Monday night. And by the way, at least from here, and obvious couple of days off, but from here, it looks like the weather could be a factor. It looks like they'll be at the tail end of a front that has gone through with 30-mile-an-hour winds and probably some form of precipitation floating around sometime during the night. But it looks like it's going to be just one of those incredibly raw nights in Buffalo, and that's outside. Like I said, I don't get the whole West Side Story thing. I've tried to watch it. I've tried to appreciate it on whatever level it's presumably been appreciated for the last, what, six decades in this country. Yeah, I just watch it. I just don't get it. But on 2020 Sunday night at 6 o'clock, they're going to do all the cast and behind the scenes look and everything like that if you are into it. If you were watching that Adele concert special a couple of weeks ago and you saw Seth Rogen in the front row, apparently that happened by accident. He was invited. He didn't know a show was being filmed. He thought he was just going to a concert, and he and his wife, and here's the quote, smoked a ton of weed, end quote, before they showed up. Well, that's so out of character for him. Oh, and by the way, back to West Side Story for a minute, which is being directed by Steven Spielberg. He now says there's only one genre of movie that he has not tackled. So there's a lot of speculation somehow that the one genre, because he didn't say what it was. He just said that there was one genre. And a lot of people think it might be like a Western type movie. And as we mentioned yesterday, they're going to do that live in front of a studio audience, The Facts of Life. Turns out Jon Stewart has joined the cast, and he's going to be in some sort of surprise role for that whole thing. All right, birthdays this weekend. Amanda Seyfried from Mamma Mia and Les Miserables, 36. Anna Chlumsky, Dan Aykroyd's daughter in the My Girl movies, and she was also on Veep. She's 41. Tiffany Haddish, 42. Julianne Moore, great actress, 61. Daryl Hannah, 61. Ozzy Osbourne, 73. Birthdays tomorrow. Tyra Banks. That chick doesn't have a forehead. She's got a five head. Good morning, everybody. She's 48. Jay-Z, 52. Fred Armisen, 55. Marissa Tomei, 57. Gary Washington, the last remaining original member of Skynyrd, 70. Jeff Bridges, 72. The Dude. Max Baer Jr., that would be Jethro, 84. Sunday birthdays, Paula Patton, beautiful actress. Used to be married to Robin Thicke, 46. Brian Backer. Now, there's a name that you know, you just don't remember. That's Rat. That's Mark Ratner from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, 65. And coming up on Sunday, it'll be the anniversary from back in 2006 when the Golden Brett did not skate out but walked out to center ice.
And as 16 raises up into the rafters, I don't want you just to applaud that. I want you to applaud every person that ever wore the blue note, and I want you to applaud yourself, because there may be equals, but there are no better hockey fans in the world. And as much as I'm remiss about not being able to hoist the cup down Market Street, with the new leadership of Mr. Checketts and John Davidson, this organization is going in the right direction, and stick with them, and they will lead you the right way. I thank you. This is my extreme honor and privilege to be in front of you.
Gloria, Gloria, I think I got the number. Gloria,
I think they got the alias.
Gloria,
that you've been living under.
Gloria,
but you really don't remember. Was it something that they said? All the voices in your head. Calling
Gloria. Gloria, Gloria.
Oh, the shirts that say drunk as hell. And finally, because we're only a couple of weeks out from Christmas right now, every Friday between now and Christmas, I will close the show with this.
This is just the facts about Santa and his sleigh.
Now, this isn't the how much the 12 days of Christmas would cost.
No, no, none of that
anybody,
stuff.
You know,
I
you,
hate
you
that.
Have my permission to put your foot through any television that sports a reporter that calculates how much the 12 days of Christmas, the 12 gifts thing, yeah, would cost in 1995.
Don't say that too loud. I'm going to walk in today. Jamie, you know we have an idea.
A News Channel 4 investigation. Go ahead, what do you got?
Does Santa come with flying reindeer to deliver presents at Christmas? Well, here are just the facts. No known species of reindeer can fly, but there are 300,000 species of living organisms yet to be classified. Although most of these are insects and germs, this does not rule out flying reindeer. Thanks to the different time zones, Santa has 31 hours of Christmas to work with, assuming he travels east to west. This works out to 822 visits per second. That means for each celebrating household with at least one good child in it, Santa has 1/1000th of a second to park, hop out of the sleigh, jump down the chimney, fill the stockings, place presents under the tree, eat the snacks, and return to the sleigh.
That's 1/1000th of a second.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, assuming all 91.8 million stops are evenly distributed throughout the Earth, the total trip will be 75.5 million miles. That means Santa's sleigh must move at 650 miles per second, 3,000 times the speed of sound. Assuming that each child gets nothing more than a medium-sized Lego set weighing about 2 pounds, the sleigh is carrying a payload of 321,000 tons, not counting Jolly St. Nick. A standard reindeer can pull no more than 300 pounds. Even if flying reindeer might pull 10 times more than normal reindeer, Santa would need 214,000 reindeer to pull the sleigh. The reindeer, payload, Santa, and sleigh would weigh more than 353,000 tons. This is 4 times the weight of Queen Elizabeth, the cruise ship. This 353,000 tons traveling at 650 miles an hour creates tremendous air resistance, heating the reindeer in the same manner as a spacecraft re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. The lead pair of reindeer will absorb 14.3 quintillion joules of energy per second each. Now, wait a minute. The lead reindeer, as a result, will burst into flames, exposing the reindeer behind them and creating massive sonic booms in their wakes. The entire reindeer team will be vaporized within 4.2 thousandths of a second. Santa will be subjected to centrifugal forces 17,000 times greater than gravity. Assuming that Santa weighs 250 pounds, he would be pinned to the back of his sleigh by 4 million pounds of centrifugal force. Merry Christmas.
And that's it, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Friday, December 3rd, 2021 is in the can. We're here every weekday morning. We publish at about 7 o'clock, give or take. That's not good, and that's my fault. I'm late all the time. It's absolutely free. That's a good thing, right? And if you miss a podcast, we archive everything. You can listen over the weekend, whatever. Email me, JC at jcontheline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with JC Corcoran. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.